This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. See if you try.
Hi, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and it's Festivus for the rest of us.
And I'm your friendly neighborhood atheist, Dan Barker. Today is December the 14th, 2013. Free Thought Radio is produced here in Madison, Wisconsin, the headquarters of the National Freedom from Religion Foundation. You can hear the show live Saturdays at 11 a.m. Central through iHeartRadio. We also broadcast in California, Michigan, New York, Missouri, and Texas, and of course, we podcast a few days later.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is a state church watchdog and has almost 20,000 members throughout North America.
In a few minutes, we're going to talk with FFRF's Metropolitan Chicago Chapter Director, Tom Kara, about the exciting Free Thought displays that they and FFRF have erected in Daly Plaza this month in downtown Chicago. Then we'll have a second guest. We're going to talk with Linda Lascola, co-author with Daniel Dennett of the new book about preachers who no longer believe. It's called Caught in the Pulpit, Leaving Belief Behind.
And before we get to that, this coming Monday is the birthday of freethinking composer Beethoven, born December 16th, 1770. Beethoven, you may not know, rejected Christianity in favor of a pantheistic or deistic viewpoint. Beethoven biographer George Merrick wrote, "There is no record of his ever attending church service or observing the orthodoxy of his religion. He never went to confession. Generally, he viewed priests with mistrust." So we'll play part of Beethoven's quartet in C major and part of his piano concerto number 5 as we got out of today's segments.
There's more than one birthday in the month of December. It's that time of year again.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, actually, it's the most busy time of the year for FFRF, with all the complaints about nativity scenes on public property and theocrats taking pot shots at us atheists and non-believers.
Thomas Jefferson today, he would recognize those who would want to try to ignore that Jesus is the reason for the season, those who would want to try to abort Christ from Christmas. He would recognize, for the most part, these are angry atheists armed with an attorney.
Well, so speaking of this Keep Christ in Christmas, this past Thursday, FFRF placed a tongue-in-cheek billboard up in Pittman, New Jersey, "Keep Saturn in Saturnalia," to counter this state church violation in this New Jersey town where we haven't been able to get any satisfaction any other way. And Dan, what is Saturnalia?
Well, that was a Roman holiday on the winter solstice that was recognizing the birth of the sun, not the birth of the sun.
It was the biggest
event. And Christians co-opted that.
So, and then speaking of taking pot shots at atheists, and this is not humorous, the International Humanist and Ethical Union issued a very timely study this week, the Free Thought Report 2013, showing 13 countries, all Muslim, have the death penalty for atheists.
And the list of countries where it's essentially a capital crime to renounce religion are Afghanistan, Iran, Malaysia, Maldives, Mauritania, Nigeria, Pakistan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, Sudan, the United Arab Emirates, and Yemen.
So that's why FFRF does what we do, working to keep religion out of government in our supposedly secular nation. So getting back to those December state church violations, so far this year, FFRF has received more than 60 complaints about nativity scenes on public property. Here's one example in the city of Chipley in northwest Florida, and this story is out of WMBB 13, which interviewed FFRF staff attorney Andrew Seidel.
The depiction of the birth of Jesus, central to the Christian faith, is a can't-miss sight at Chipley City Hall. But the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which claims 20,000 members nationwide, says the display shouldn't be on public property.
The government cannot endorse one religion over another, and it can't endorse religion over non-religion. Erecting a display with a message that's central to the Christian religion can only be seen as an endorsement.
The foundation sent this letter to Chipley's mayor demanding the display be removed. Its attorney says nativity scenes should be erected by churches, not governments.
Well, we love the nativity scene in front of City Hall. We think it represents the majority of the beliefs of the people that live here in Chipley.
The Bill of Rights exists to protect the minority from the tyranny of the majority.
We're not forcing anybody to come down here and look at the nativity scene, but it's there if you want to come see it.
The city council meets tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, and this is expected to be a hot topic. Councilwoman Karen Rustin told me today that she will be there with her Bible and that the display is not coming down.
So we'll keep you posted on that. Now, there's a variety of places around the country where nativity scenes have been placed, and then they declare that they're public forums. So FFRF and many other non-religious humanist groups are starting to put displays up, and we're in four state capitals, Illinois, Florida, Wisconsin, and going up just this week in Providence, Rhode Island.
Well, and Olympia, Washington, too.
Oh, on the outside.
Yeah.
But we're talking about inside displays. And we want to thank Tallahassee FFRF members Gary Wittenberger and Warren Brackman for getting our display up in the Florida Capitol. That display depicts the Nativity of the Bill of Rights, which is December 15th, the anniversary of the Bill of Rights. And the Founding Fathers are gazing in adoration at a Bill of Rights in a crib.
And we just found out that right next to our sign there, the Festivus pole made out of Pabst beer was just placed next to our sign.
That's getting a lot of publicity. And FFRF placed our classic winter solstice sign in the Illinois Capitol in reaction to a manger scene first placed there 6 years ago. And it's our traditional solstice message to counter nativity scenes on government property, composed by Ann Nicol Gaylor, co-president emerita of FFRF, or president emerita. And it says, "At this season of the winter solstice, may reason prevail. There are no gods, no devils, no angels, no heaven or hell. There is only our natural world. Religion is but myth and superstition that hardens hearts and enslaves minds."
And we want to thank our member, Steve Folk, who drove 8 hours round trip to place the sign on December 1st in advance of the religious ceremony held when the creche was put up in Springfield, Illinois.
And that religious ceremony in Springfield was very disturbing. The Thomas More Society said, "We're here on our soapbox to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ." The Springfield Nativity Scene Committee chair said the goal is to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ in a public square. "We don't think religion should be in our Capitol buildings or irreligion, but if they're going to put religion there, there should be room at the inn for all of us." And I also want to point out that Bishop Thomas Paprocki of the Springfield Roman Catholic Diocese was at that ceremony, and he was introduced as a pro-family warrior. And you'll recall, he's the bishop who held an exorcism on November 20th to protest same-sex marriage being signed into law in Illinois. And Focus on the Family has announced a goal to get nativity scenes in all 50 state capitals.
And FFRF's May Reason Prevail message was also placed in the Wisconsin state capitol in Madison for its 18th visit through the month of December. Joining the classic sign is FFRF's tongue-in-cheek natural nativity scene featuring a black baby girl doll in a manger with wise men such as Darwin and Einstein.
So we also have our Let Reason Prevail No God's sign going up in the Rhode Island State House, as I pointed out. And we want to thank FFRF member Debbie Flitman. It's to counter a manger scene that's been put up there for 2 years in a row.
As a reminder to you Madison listeners, you're cordially invited to FFRF's annual Capitol Rotunda concert at 12 noon on Monday, December 16th, next Monday, celebrating both the Bill of Rights Day and the Winter Solstice. We'll have cookies, concert, and good cheer. That's on the first floor, not the ground floor, the Rotunda, starting at noon.
Dan Barker and Ken Longquist will entertain. See you there. And then we'll be right back to talk with Tom Cara about free thought activism in Illinois.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a nonprofit organization. We hope you'll join us at fffrf.org. And now we are going to introduce in a minute Tom Cara, who is the director of FFRF's Metropolitan Chicago chapter. He's retired from the field of marketing, and he's doing some very good marketing for Free Thought, putting his skills to promoting free thought, reason, and science. And the Chicago area chapter's been very busy this past month, and here is one of the many news stories, TV coverage included, of the displays that the Chicago chapter and FFRF erected in Daley Plaza in downtown Chicago, and this is from WGN9.
Chicago's Daley Plaza has a new display this holiday season.
In Daley Plaza, freedom of expression is in full bloom. At a table set up by a Christian group, prayers are offered to those who feel the need for support. A short distance away is a large A, which was erected by a group of atheists. It stands right next to a giant menorah and a short distance away from a Christian nativity scene.
If other perspectives are represented here during the winter solstice season, which is the reason for the season, then our perspective ought to be represented here too.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation has its own A for atheists.
I think it's kind of cool, you know, the idea of it's like, this is everyone's like public property, and I really like the idea that, you know, you have Catholicism, Judaism, the Chanukah thing, and then you have the atheist A. I think it's just like, it's an awesome idea.
I think it's pretty cool. I think it's just a little weird, maybe just because it's not an actual religion. And I think Chicago's a really liberal city, so it's important that everyone gets a chance to express themselves.
And when you think that in many places around the world, this kind of joint symbolism could not take place, it does show us that we are indeed lucky to be here. In Daley Plaza, Robert Jordan, WGNU.
So it looks like Chicago is our kind of town, very liberal, very open. We have on the phone with us from the Chicago area the director of FFRF's Metropolitan Chicago chapter, Tom Cara. So Tom, welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here, and I'm going to try to say this correctly, so let me know if I do not.
Well, speaking...
Happy Dies Natalis Invicti Solis.
Ah, Dies Natalis Invicti Solis, yeah.
So, happy birthday to the unconquered sun.
Yes, if there was anything that we should be honestly worshiping, it would have to be our sun, because we can see it in the sky, we can feel its warmth, and we know for a fact that we would not be here without it, unlike an invisible being for which we have no evidence.
Yes, it gives us life. Speaking of saying things correctly, I noticed that I'm calling you Tom Cara and Dan's calling you Tom Cara. How do we say your last name?
It is Cara.
Cara, okay. Many pardons.
He probably doesn't.
I've been called both for many years, so I've gotten used to both. So.
You probably don't care at all, do you?
Oh, Dan, you are so quick.
Hey, that was fun that last week ago Tuesday, going down to Daley Plaza with you and a lot of really excited members of the foundation and of the chapter to set those signs up, the display. To our listeners, can you describe what it is that your chapter and we set up in Daley Plaza?
Well, describing what we actually set up?
Yeah.
Well, we set up I believe it's about an 8-foot-long banner, which was created this year, a new banner that FFRF has created, and it basically took the image from something that our chapter had designed last year. Actually, it was designed by Jake Fortin, the good atheist, and it was the... image of the founding fathers in a secular nativity scene overlooking the Bill of Rights to honor the birth of the Bill of Rights, the ratification of the Bill of Rights on December 15th, 1791, and also describing the winter solstice and the celebration of the winter solstice. And next to that, of course, is, I believe it's about a 9-foot sign. I know we've been calling it 8-foot, but when we measured it, it was actually about 9 feet tall. The Richard Dawkins Foundation A sign, all lit up in red, designed to bring atheists and agnostics together and to give them representation and encourage them to come out of the closet.
That sign looks really great at night with the red lights on it. You can see it from a long ways away.
It does.
In the daytime, in the daytime, you have to kind of get up close to see it, but at night,
right.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah, so
it's...
I had the opportunity to see it for the first time at night on Monday this past week, and it does really look wonderful at night.
So A is for atheism and B is for the Bill of Rights. And so we have these two signs sort of sandwiched in between this absolutely ginormous menorah and then a huge, more than life-size scene, nativity scene that's down there in Daly Plaza. So
it is, it is to scale, that's for sure. It's a huge setup, the nativity scene. And when I was down there on Monday, I was kind of hanging out by the creche a little bit and just observing people who were staring at the creche, and had the opportunity to engage some people about it. And it was some interesting conversation.
Well, I think that we are also seeing that there's more attention being paid to the A sign than the banner. And I think that maybe tells us that you're on to the right thing there, Tom, coming up with this something that doesn't get totally dwarfed by the large menorahs and the very large nativity scenes that you see everywhere in these public forums. So
right.
Congratulations.
Well, I mean, I believe it was FFRF that came up with the idea. And
I think it was idea, actually, but I did not. It was your, you and actually, and Patrick Elliott deserves a great deal of thanks.
Patrick Elliott deserves a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. He did an incredible amount of work in getting all the permits taken care of and doing a lot of the legwork.
But didn't you find the company that made the sign for us?
No, I
is that Patrick?
Believe that was all through your office.
I guess that was
sure
Patrick.
That was Patrick.
So we have to go shake
Patrick.
His hand.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
Anyway,
he did an incredible amount of work.
So, it does finally have something of some presence, because our little signs and banners tend to get dwarfed at this time of year. So
right.
We are really delighted.
And, yeah, the representation of non-believers is important. And while we certainly stand on the position that we would prefer not to be there and not have the religious symbols there, it is important that the non-theist viewpoint come out and that those who are of non-belief feel that they are being represented.
And Tom, I know for a fact that you came up with the wording for the banner and the wording for the sign that goes up by the A. Do you have any of that in front of you?
Oh, boy.
Well, the sign says
right in front of me at the moment.
A is for atheist. Yeah, it describes atheism.
The atheist sign.
Yeah.
Or the banner.
You're going to have to drive down there and look at it again.
Okay, I can pull up the atheist sign.
Aren't you encouraged, though? When we first put it up that Tuesday, there was a day or two when there was kind of silent, and then suddenly just all over the news, all over the internet, and TV stories and all sorts of print stories about that free thought presence. You know, it's not far from that big, is that a Picasso sculpture in the middle of Daly Plaza?
Yes, right in the middle of the plaza, that's Picasso, and then they have the tree right in front of that, and of course the whole Chris Kindle Market, which has been there for several years, pretty much takes up most of the plaza. And then the religious symbols are kind of on the outskirts of the plaza with the creche and the menorah and our display. And I just received word this morning, actually, that I believe the menorah, I'm told it was being moved. I don't know if that means it's being taken down, but they have said to us that because the menorah is no longer there, that we can move our A sign and our banner closer actually to where the menorah was, and that way we can have our sign lit up 24/7.
Good.
Which we didn't have that opportunity before.
Great.
So we're going to try to drum up some volunteers to get back down there and move the signs.
Aren't you impressed with the people on the street seem to be accepting this with just some sort of, I guess, of course, you know, equanimity. Of course, there are non-believers in this country, and we all have our place at the table these days. So,
yes, Chicago, the metropolitan area, is a very diverse community, and they are very open and accepting and tolerant of other beliefs and other opinions. And for the most part, it's been very well received. I think most of the negative comments that I do see and read have probably come mostly from people outside of our area. I think people in the metropolitan area of Chicago are pretty well accepting of other people's beliefs and non-belief.
Well, then it is our kind of town. Well, thank you, Tom. Tom Kara is the director.
Thank you.
Director of FFRF's Metropolitan Area chapter, and they've been very busy. We'll have to have you back on to talk about some of your many other activities. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. And I'm Annie Lardella.
I'm Dan Barker, and stay tuned. After the break, we're going to talk with Linda LaScola. She's co-author with Daniel Dennett of a new book about clergy who have abandoned their beliefs. The book is called Caught in the Pulpit, Leaving Belief Behind.
And you must be in that book, Dan, right?
I guess I am. We'll have to ask Linda.
So we will be right back after this break.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Now, I know something about this next topic we're going to discuss. What is it like to be a preacher who no longer believes what he or she is preaching, who no longer believes the creed? There's a brand new book out about that very topic. It's called Caught in the Pulpit, Leaving Belief Behind. It's co-written by Daniel C. Dennett, whom we've had on this show before, talking about a number of his books, The Philosopher, and a researcher named Linda LaScola. Linda LaScola is a qualitative researcher. For more than 25 years, she's traveled around the country. She's interviewed people on numerous subjects, health subjects, mental health, public policy, and on religion. She has a Master of Social Work from the Catholic University, and this is her first book. She's published and participated in a number of published studies. She lives in Washington, D.C. Linda LaScola and Daniel Dennett, and we've talked about this on our show before, produced in the year 2010 a Tufts University study called Preachers Who Are Not Believers. It was published, including in Evolutionary Psychology, in March 2010. And they have just finished phase two of that study. So, Linda, calling us, we're talking to you in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
I also noticed on the front of the cover of the book, it's a great cover, by the way. There's this minister standing in the pulpit making a point with his right hand to the audience, and it's a shot from behind, and his left hand is behind his back with his fingers crossed.
Yes.
That's a great cover. And by the way, it also says there's a foreword by Richard Dawkins to the book.
So, and Richard Dawkins is also part of the, well, some of this is the clergy project overlap, isn't it?
Well, it's a number of things coming together. So, Linda, why don't you tell us why the need for this book and how this book came about?
Well, the book came about from the original pilot study done in 2010. At that point, we were really just doing a pilot study to see how difficult it would be to recruit people to participate in the study. And as you know, Dan, you helped us a lot with that. And without your help and the help of a clergyman by the name of Jim Adams, who was the pastor of a church I used to attend, there really wouldn't have been a pilot study.
Yeah, because how do you find these people?
It was hard, and the way we found some of them was that they were people who in desperation called you because they had heard of your book, Godless, and they had a way to contact you, and they called you for comfort, I suppose.
Yeah.
Certainly not to participate in the study, but they learned about the study once talking to you. And we reached out through Jim Adams, through his organization, the Center for Progressive Christianity, and that organization as such was not involved in the study. But Jim provided us with a list of names and permission to contact the people about the study. And that's how the first one came about.
And you know as well as I do the almost relief in their voice when they're finally talking to someone. Some of them are talking to you for the very first time with anybody about these issues.
That's right. And it was so rewarding for them and for me to be able to talk openly and honestly and at length. Really, for the first time. Some of them had spoken to their spouses and other confidants, but not at any great length, and certainly not in the depth that the study allowed for. I did usually three interviews with each clergy person who was still active in the clergy.
So they must have been, what, nervous? Or I mean, you had to make sure you're protecting their privacy, their confidentiality. You and Dan Dennett are working on this as a professional scientific study. It's not just interviews, but you're conducting a real study.
Right. This whole study went through Tufts University. And like any academic study, it had to be approved by the Institutional Review Board. Dan and I both had to take a course, an online course that would qualify us to conduct a study, even though I've been conducting studies for about 20 years before that, and Dan had been a philosophy professor at Tufts for at least that long. We had to take this special course in order to qualify us to conduct an academic study through the university.
Because it has to be objective, and it has to be, you know, there's a difference between, and you're known as a qualitative researcher.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain to our listeners what's, and there's a quantitative researcher too, what's the difference?
Well, I think most people are familiar with quantitative research, and what that is surveys. And I probably, the way most people are familiar with them is through those, so many political surveys that are done around election time. And those require a large, large number of people. And they're asked in a survey format, questions that are all set in advance and must be asked in exactly the same way each time. Qualitative research is very different from that. Usually the sample is much smaller, you know, from 10 people to 90 people. The largest study I ever did was with 90 people. This study included 35 people in all. And the way the questions are asked are quite different. In fact, I don't even call them questions. I call them question areas. So you know in advance you're going to ask about certain things, but how the interview proceeds depends very much on the person you're speaking with and what they have to say and what they want to share and how good, how skillful the interviewer it is at getting information from them. So it although you have a certain kinds of information you want to talk about, like their childhood, religion, their reasons for entering seminary, their experiences in seminary, how their beliefs started to change, that varies greatly from person to person, depending on their individual experiences.
So then there's some way to compare them, right, scientifically?
Well, tell me what you mean by that. I'll ask you a qualitative research question. What do you mean by that?
Very good. Well, you've got X number of interviews, and then you're doing some kind of post-comparison of what you've learned from them.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the things you learned?
Well, we learned all sorts of things. We learned, first of all, that people are incredibly different from each other. They're what they have in common, of course, is that they all made the same career choice. But what is different about them is they all had different life experiences. And those played a huge part in how they feel about the religious beliefs and how they eventually respond to them.
So could I ask you, what are the major struggles among the non-believing clergy who are still in the pulpit?
The ones who are still in the pulpit, they struggle, as Dan Barker, who we're speaking with now, knows, with hypocrisy. That's not a word that came up very often in the interviews, but they struggle with being honest with themselves and honest with the people that they're working with. And a lot of them really adapt, I think, in very creative and positive ways, in the sense that they soften their message. They still may use the Bible as a background source, but they're not preaching simply the Bible story. They're preaching what it means in modern life. And I think, you know, a lot of clergy do that, whether they're believing or non-believing. They have struggles with their families, and those also vary depending on how open their spouses are. Often a spouse will change along with the pastor, and often they don't, and that can cause a huge conflict.
We know some of them right now are in marriage counseling and are really struggling. Well, this fellow, Lee, is not his real name. He's a missionary to Southeast Asia. He just informed his wife that they're not going back to the mission field, and she's crushed. That's how she's viewed her whole life, as a missionary's wife. And so he wanted to make sure there was some good secular marriage counseling that they can go to, so their marriage is up in the air.
Yeah, that's a shame, and it happens all too often.
No, I know we kind of talked about how you got interested in this topic. It mm-hmm. seems to me it all hinges on the formation of the Clergy Project. And you're one of the principal...
No, actually, the Clergy Project came after.
Oh, really?
The study.
Yeah.
Oh.
It did. I approached Dan Dennett about the study in 2007. And it was at a conference that you were at as well, Dan. It was the 2007 Atheist Alliance Conference in Washington, D.C.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. That's the first time I met Dan, but I had contacted him by email after reading his book, Breaking the Spell, and also after reading an essay he did for the Washington Post on Faith Forum about Mother Teresa losing her faith. And in that interview, or rather in that essay, he said that he felt there were lots of people like Mother Teresa whose faith had changed. And I agreed with him on that. I had recently begun my own study of religion, the first one I had undertaken in my long life, and saw a lot of the problems with religion that that I eventually found out more about in the study, and I wanted to study it further. So I just simply contacted him, and a couple of weeks later, he contacted me back and said he thought it was a great idea, and perhaps we could talk about it.
So that's how it began.
That's how it started.
We are talking with Linda Lascola about her new book, written with Daniel C. Dennett, Caught in the Pulpit, Leaving Belief Behind. And we will come back in a minute. I'm here with Dan Barker, who is one of those who used to be a minister, who has left belief behind. And we'll talk about the book and the Clergy Project in a minute.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie.
And we're continuing our conversation with Linda Lascola, a qualitative researcher who has just come out with a new book, her first book, actually, co-authored with Daniel C. Dennett. And this is not Daniel Dennett's first book. It's probably his 86th or 94th, who knows, whatever. With a foreword by Richard Dawkins. The book is about clergy who have abandoned their faith. It's called Caught in the Pulpit, Leaving Belief Behind. And Linda, how can we get the book? Is it on bookshelves now?
No, at the moment it's available strictly through Amazon. The Kindle version is out, and the paperback will be coming out soon, very soon. We hope December 20th or earlier. Just in time for Christmas.
Just in time for winter solstice.
Right.
December 21st.
And thank you for sending me a Kindle version of the book, which I got to be one of the first to read.
So. Yes, indeed.
And then you also told us in the last segment that this started as a study, Preachers Who Are Not Believers, that was published in Evolutionary Psychology in mm-hmm. March 2010, and that you have the second phase of the study published. And what is that called, and how does somebody find that?
Well, that's the book we're talking about. That's Caught in the Pulpit,
Leaving
Behind.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's phase two. It's not a journal. It's actually
we
the
thought
book.
That. Okay. Well, that right. makes sense. Mm-hmm. So there's one.
The original
one
was a pilot study. Frankly, I never even expected to publish that because it was such a small study, just five ministers. And as I said, the purpose was to find out how difficult it was to recruit. And what happened from that study is that recruiting became very simple because the study was so widely publicized that a lot of people heard about it and started contacting us the way the initial people contacted you, Dan. They started contacting me and Dan Dennett to participate in phase two. So we had no trouble recruiting for the second study, had 35 people altogether in that study, and that's what the book is based on, those people as well as the people from the first study.
And describe the book. It has your methodology, but then it has interviews, right?
Right. What we do is we describe qualitative research so that people understand what that is and understand the depth that's involved in it. And then we have, I'm looking at the table of contents right now, then there are five sketches. We have a Presbyterian woman, a Lutheran pastor and a man, and then we have a Lutheran seminary dropout, and then a Catholic priest, and a Mormon bishop.
Wow, so it's covering the gamut.
Right, and we do. And there's five sketches that pretty well describes those people as individuals. And then Dan has a chapter on, it's called Breaking the Shell, the Transparency and Survival of Religions.
And that's a play on Breaking the Spell,
exactly,
his best-selling
exactly.
book on religion.
Uh-huh. And then chapter four, is we call it From the Ivory Tower to the People in the Pews. And we in that section, we include interviews with the three seminary professors that we spoke to. And then we spend two chapters talking about what happens in the seminary, the student's perspective, and what happens after seminary once they are preaching and teaching. And then a section on burnout and depression, which is an important element. And they also need to be, it needs to be distinguished. There's a difference between burnout and depression. And in fact, only a few of our people suffered severe depression.
But you're saying that burnout was typical?
No, no, I'm not saying that at all, actually. People talk about burnout and sometimes in depression as though they're the same thing. And they're really quite different. Burnout comes from, in some cases, just from being overworked at a job you really love. And what we found that was not what our people, did not seem to be what they were suffering from. And although some of them became depressed in the course of their changing of their beliefs, it wasn't something that happened routinely. And in fact, some people became depressed, or rather their depression lifted when they found religion, when they initially found religion, let's say, as teenagers. And then they became, and then some people became depressed when their religious beliefs were changing, and then the depression lifted when they realized that and accepted that they didn't believe anymore.
Well, that was me. I was excited to finally get rid of faith. It was like positive. It was a life-changing thing for me. I'm sure they did. The clergy give you their reasons in briefly. Why did they lose their beliefs?
That's a good question, because I think I can say pretty easily that it was because of information. They were gathering information along the way. In some cases, it was reading some of the more liberal people in their own religious tradition. And they weren't reading those people because they were having doubts or because they were questioning their faith. They were reading those people because they were voices from their own tradition. But they led them to having more questions. In some cases, they started reading science and found that they were more interested in that and that it made more sense to them than their theological readings. And in many cases, in fact, I think to some extent in all cases, reading the Bible had a big effect as well. Because as ministers, as pastors, as you're reading it over and over again, and you're reading it for meaning and you're reading it to use it to present to your parishioners. And the more you do that, the more you see the inconsistencies and the problems in it.
Basically, I noticed that in most cases like this, it's intellectual. It's not some moral thing or some social gripe or some disappointment with the church or bitterness.
Or some emotional breakdown.
But it's because it just doesn't make sense anymore for most clergy who leave the faith.
That's correct. And that's something that I found a lot of religious people find difficult to understand, because I think it seems that a lot of religion is gained in revelation, that suddenly you feel the Spirit. And having your beliefs change toward non-belief doesn't happen that way. It's a steady progression, and it involves information.
It was really nice how all this came together. Your study with Dan Dennett, and then Richard Dawkins wanting to do something to help clergy who were in the pulpit. And you remember that day in D.C.?
I remember it well.
In January?
Indian Museum and the cafe there. It was It was wonderful. What was wonderful about that day and really about the whole thing was that it was such a relief to me to know that there was going to be a place that these people that I talked to and that wanted to talk to me and hadn't had a chance yet, there would be a place for them to interact with other people just like them.
We're talking about the creation of the Clergy Project.
The Clergy Project.
That was you and me and Elizabeth Cornwell, who is with Richard Dawkins Foundation. And now...
And Daniel Dennett. And
At that meeting at the cafe, it was just the three of us.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And now there's more than 500 former or active clergy who are part of the Clergy Project, and much more access to sharing of information than there was before.
And we started out, I recall, with 52 people. It was a combination of the names that I had of the people who had contacted me and Dan Dennett about the study, and names you had been gathering over the years.
So people can find out about that at clergyproject.org. Very briefly, Linda, you were raised religious?
Yes, I was raised a Roman Catholic in a very kind of casual, liberal sort of way.
And so when did you, start questioning religion? In about 30 seconds.
I didn't really think much about religion, and I didn't really start questioning religion. I just sort of became interested in religion for the first time about 8 years ago when I went to Italy and saw how religion unfolded through the art and architecture. And it seemed like an interesting subject that I should have studied a long time ago.
And to study it scientifically is kind of a new thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a blasphemous thing, I suppose.
Well, as a child, like most children, I had been indoctrinated. And I wasn't heavily indoctrinated. My parents didn't really seem very interested in religion themselves. It was just part of the culture. But the only way I learned about it, and the way many people learned about it, is what you hear from your parents and what you hear from church.
Well, we are out of time. Please get Caught in the Pulpit.
Caught in the Pulpit, Leaving Belief Behind by Daniel C. Dennett. We've been talking with the co-author of that book, Linda LaScola, who also helped co-found the Clergy Project. Thank you, Linda, for being a guest today. And we also want to thank our engineer, our producer, Dave McCann. This show is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. You can find out more about our show at ffrf.org/news/radio.
You can join us at ffrf.org, or you can phone 1-800-335-4021. You can ask for a sample of our December issue of Free Thought Today. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday